Okay, what I'd like to do is think about tefillah a little bit as a conversation and open with a story. It's a story that those of you who had the opportunity to learn with during the session over the Shabbaton may have heard. We'll see how much you remember and we're listening. But the story is told of a successful businessman in the United States who was very involved in an organization in Eretz Yisrael that distributed money to poor people. And this person went to travel to Eretz Yisrael. He met with the director of the organization, and the director of the organization went through certain needs that the organization had, certain families in difficult situations, and this successful businessman, this philanthropist, wrote several checks for each of the people in need, and after really, I think, an emotional day of going through the needs of various people in Israel, the director of the organization said, let's go to the Kotel, and they went to the Kotel to daven together, and when he was there, this philanthropist, this successful man, saw a person davening and davening and davening, really emotionally davening. Looks like he was crying. And this businessman went over, tapped him on the shoulder and said, sir, you look sad. You look like there's something really heavy going on. Perhaps I could be helpful. And the person kind of shooed him away and said, no, everything's okay, and went back to his davening. And the scene continued another few minutes. Again, this philanthropist who'd just been listening to story after story said to himself, it can't be that another Jew is in need and I don't do anything to help. And so he tapped the person on the shoulder again and said, please, can you share with me what's causing you to be so emotional? And he takes out his checkbook. He says, I'll write you a check for whatever you need. I'd like to help. Please let me know what you need. And you don't even need to describe. Just tell me how much you need. And the person again shrugs him off and says, everything's okay, and goes back to davening. Finally, one more time, a few minutes later, he really can't hold back, and he knows he may be bugging him, but he taps on the shoulder and says, please, I can't leave here without helping you. It's just the emotions that you're wearing, the tears coming down your face, scream out that you're in need. What can I do for you? And this person who's been davening looks at the philanthropist and says, what makes you so convinced that I need something? He says, look at you're crying. You're clearly pouring out your heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You need something. And he said, I don't need anything. I came from the wedding of my youngest child. I've been blessed by 10 children, and my youngest child is married. I'm so fortunate. Baruch Hashem, what a bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. And I'm here expressing my appreciation, and it's true, you're right. You see emotion, you see tears, but these are tears of gratitude. And the story struck me because it's true. Often, we're like this philanthropist. We think of davening as like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an ATM machine. We need something, we go to Hashem, here's what I need. Hashem does it, and life moves on. We don't always think about that other part of davening, which is davening's also appreciation. And what they both share is a recognition that what tefillah really is a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And sometimes that conversation involves requests that we have. Sometimes that conversation involves appreciation, but involves a conversation. And certainly, there are two parts to the conversation. If we had to actually ask ourselves, right, if we did a poll, a survey of the teenagers in the room, perhaps it's true for us as adults as well, one of the challenges we feel in davening is that it may feel sometimes like a one-sided conversation. I say things to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I don't always hear Hashem. And so what I'd like to try to do in the limited time that we have is go through three parts of davening. One is understanding how davening works, the power of tefillah, thinking a little bit about what is tefillah, and then finally hearing Hashem in his response. And if you turn to the back of the sheet, I know it's out of order, but if you turn to the back of the sheet, so the Chashuk Echemet, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, the son-in-law of Rav Elyashiv, wrote a sefer on different shailas, different questions that come up following the order of our Gemara. And in our Gemara, on Daf Chaf Tet Amud Beis, he raises the following question, Sheila, Ma'ase Bechole, it was a story of a sick person, Shedimein. He was gushing blood. He was bleeding in a very, very unhealthy way. Velo pasak, and they couldn't cause the blood to stop. The blood wouldn't clot. It was incredibly dangerous. V'arofim lo yadu lashis eitzah b'nafsham. The doctors were baffled. They didn't know how to get the blood to stop, how to clot the blood, and it was, again, becoming incredibly dangerous. Bo b'nei ha-mishpacha v'esichu libam hamar lifnei ha-gaon ha-tzadik of Yechezkel Levenstein. So the family of this ill person went to Rav Yechezkel Levenstein, and they begged of him, she'apil t'chinaso lifnei borei olam y'sharachim aleihem. And they asked Rav Levenstein to please daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to ask Hashem to intervene, to save their relative. Shamar Rav Yechezkel v'amar, Hashem yisparach y'rachim al hachola. Hashem should have rachmanas, Hashem should have sympathy on the ill person. Vinei hadam pasak. And miraculously, the blood stopped. Shelo kederach hateva, in a very unnatural way. V'haya lepella. And it was, again, wondrous to everyone. Haim zeh neis. So the question is a little bit of a funny question, but did we use up our merits in earning this supernatural, miraculous recovery? And that was the question that was posed to Rav Zilberstein. And Rav Zilberstein refers to the Gemara in source number 2. It's a fascinating Gemara. It's a Gemara that actually, if you went back right before where I copied, discusses who gets priority in Talmud Torah, a parent or a son. If a family only has enough resources for either the father or the son to learn, who gets priority? Again, it's an interesting topic for today. We left that part off, but that's going to be relevant for as the Gemara unfolds. The Gemara tells us, Ki hadra of Yaakov, breder of Acha bar Yaakov. There was an individual, Rav Yaakov, the son of Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Shadre avua lekame da baye. I don't know what Shadre means. It's a hard word. Is to send. Correct. So his avuha, what's avuha? His father, good. So his father sent him meaning Rav Yaakov, in front of Abaye. Kiasa, what's kiasa? When he arrived, very good. Chaze, he saw. Delo havu mechaded in shmaise. He saw that he wasn't so, chaded is sharp. He wasn't so sharp, he wasn't being so successful in his learning. Amar le, Anna Adifa Minach. And he said to him, I'm not sure this is a parenting style we would advocate, but he said, I'm better than you. Tov at, you go home. Da'ai Zalana, because I'm going to go learn. Okay, so we understand what's going on. Father's not so happy. His son's not being as successful. The father says, I think I can learn better than you. You should go home, and I'm going to come learn in place of you. Shama Abaye dekahavas. Abaye heard that he was coming, right? He, meaning Rav Acha bar Yaakov, was coming. Hava hahu mazik be rabbanan. There was a certain mazik. What's a mazik? A damager or a demon, right? Specifically a demon. In the Beis Medrash of Abaye, dechi hava aili betrein afilu biyamama hava mitzakei. This demon was so ferocious that it would even attack during the day, which is not often what demons do. They'd often only attack at night, and they also often would only attack an individual. So this demon was so ferocious that it would even attack during the day and also attack in pairs. Amar lehu. So listen to what Abaye says. Lo lesev le'inish ushpiza. No one should give him ushpiza. What's ushpiza? A place to sleep, a guest lodges. No one should welcome him into their house. Why not? Efshar de Misrachesh Nisa. What does that mean? What's Efshar? Perhaps. It's possible that a miracle will happen. Just for the record, your sons are usually much more participatory when you're not here. And guys, you are welcome to participate. But anyway, he says, maybe a miracle will happen. What does that mean, maybe a miracle will happen? It means that somehow, maybe, this Tzadik Rav Acha bar Yaakov will kill the demon. So no one invite him into his house. He's going to be attacked by the demon, and perhaps he will defeat the demon. Al, he went up, Basba Ubi Rabbanan, Idme Leketanina de Shiva Rishvase. And the demon appeared to him like a seven-headed monster. Shiva Rishvase is at seven heads. Kol Kriya Dekara, the seven times that Rav Acha bowed, Rav Acha bowed, the seven times that he bowed, why does he bow seven times? Who knows? Okay, Yaakov bows seven times. But if you look in Shmon Esrei, so he bows seven times. So he daven in Shmon Esrei, he bowed seven times. Each bow, Natar Chad Reshei, cut off one head of the demon. Amar Lehu Lamachar, the next day, when Rav Acha came to the Beis Medrash and he greets Abaye, he says, Ilo Yisrachesh Nisa, had a miracle not happened to me, Sakintin. What's Sakintin? I would have been placed in danger. So in other words, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, as we could all understand, was not very happy to be left homeless, was not very happy to be attacked by the demon, and miraculously he was saved, but he didn't appreciate the situation that he was in. When we learn this Gemara, it would seem to be somewhat difficult. What's hard to understand about this Gemara? Get audience participation. What? Okay, you don't like the seven-headed demon. What's troubling? What's bothersome about this Gemara? What's bothersome? Let's see. Students. Someone can get this. what bothers you? It doesn't seem to go with the way we would typically live life. Why not? Yes. Okay, well, what do you think he was doing? He wasn't really bowing to the demon. What was he doing? He was davening, right? And he was bowing in the context of davening. What bothers us?
I mean, why did Abaye know that he would be able to defeat it?
Okay, so how did Abaye know? Maybe Abaye didn't know. In which case, what's more bothersome?
They could have died.
He could have died. And what's our general rule of life?
You don't daven for miracles.
We don't rely on miracles. We could daven for miracles. We don't typically rely on miracles. So what exactly was going on? Why was it that Abaye set up this whole plan that was totally dependent on a miracle happening? So if you look in source 3, the Marsha is bothered by this question. The Marsha asks, Efshar d'misrachesh nisa. Anyone know what the kuf stands for? I'll give you the first ktsas. It's a little bit kashe. It's a little bit difficult. How could Abaye place Rav Acha into a place of danger? How could he say to him, I'm going to leave you on the street, and perhaps in your davening you'll defeat the demon? How could he do such a thing? So listen to what the Marsha says. The Marsha says something on the second line remarkable. Vav Yod Lamed, we know this. What's Vav Yod Lamed? V'yesh Lomar. It's possible to say. Devadai Samach Abaye Al Chasiduso. Abaye relied deeply on the piousness, the righteousness of Rav Acha. Shemitoch tfilaso lo yehiye nizok. That what would emerge from the davening? Not possibly a miracle, but certainly a miracle. It wasn't a question of him winning or not. For sure, if Rav Acha davened, the demon was dead. Consider it done. V'yahorgas hamasik. V'ein zem mikrei nes. That's not a miracle. Ella Shamar Shema Kodem Tfila Yisrachesh Nisa. Perhaps before he had a chance to daven, a miracle would happen. In other words, he said Efshar Yisrachesh Nisa, maybe a miracle would happen, but that miracle would have been something that happened before him. Davening is not a miracle. And that's what Rav Zilberstein says, is that actually there's nothing miraculous here. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world is Tfila is a part of the general operation of the world. The same way, if you swipe a credit card, and there's money on the credit card. Teenage boys, it doesn't automatically just pay. However, you swipe a credit card, money gets transferred, right? That's the way in which a credit card works. There are many things. This is how it works. So the way the world works, says the Marsha, is that if I daven for something, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears the tefillah. Now again, it's complicated whether or not Hashem will decide to say yes, whether Hashem decides to say no, but that's an automatic formula of tefillah works. So again, it's more complicated how we see that working happening, but the Marsha says there's nothing miraculous, nothing supernatural about the fact that when Rav Acha davened, his tefillah would be answered. And so that, to me, is the starting point, just understanding the incredible power of what tefillah is. What exactly is tefillah? So there is a well-known contradiction in the Rambam. And if we look in Source 4, the Rambam Perek Dalet tells us, who would like to read? We'll get some audience participation. A student volunteer. All you have to do is read. Yes, thank you, Jacob. Good. Period. Great place to stop. Do you want to try to translate or should we get someone else? What's Chamisha Dvarim? Five things. Ma'akvin es ha'tfila. They prevent. La'akev is to prevent. There are five things that prevent tefillah from being answered or from being received. Af al pi shegiya zmana, even though what? The time has come. Okay, five things. I put in parentheses the first four. They're somewhat technical. It's only the last one that I want to focus on. What's the last one underlined? Kavana salev. I have to have intent. No intent, no tefillah. Again, if you think about societally, we live in a fairly positive society. The Rambam, what he's saying, seems to be pretty harsh. There are five things, not that it would be good, we should aspire to have good tefillah, you know, at least just try. That's typically how we try to look at tefillah. We can look at it along a continuum. There's good, there's better, there's best. The Rambam says, without these five things, literally tefillah is no good. Ma'akvinas ha'tefillah. They prevent tefillah. It's very black and white. The Rambam's not always so black and white. So we have to think a little bit of why he's black and white. However, if we fast forward to source 5, Notice that source 4 is Perek Dalet Hilchos Tefila. Source 5 is Perek Yud Hilchos Tefila. The Rambam says, let's get another participant who wants to read source 5. Jacob did such a good job. I'm sure he's making everyone feel you can do it also.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Nate. Good, what does that mean? Misha Hispalel, someone who davens, velo kiven es libo, he doesn't have kavana, yachzor hispalel bekavana, what should he do? Okay, so far, would we say consistent or inconsistent with the previous source? Consistent, right? If my tefillah is no good, I need to do it again. That would seem to be perfectly consistent. However, Nate, finish the halacha. Yeah, what does that mean? Good. Consistent or inconsistent with what we've said? Why is that inconsistent, Adir? Exactly. Until now, we've been saying you need kavana the whole tefillah. And if you don't have kavana, you have to repeat it. And then all of a sudden, the Rambam says, oh, actually, one bracha is enough. So this is what's called a steer. It's a contradiction. Which one is it? Again, six prakim later, the Rambam is a pretty smart person. He didn't forget Perek Dalet when he got to Perek Yud. So different ways to try to approach it. If you flip to the back, it's, again, a well-known, parents in the room may have learned this, Rav Chaim Ala Rambam tries to answer this stira. And to answer it, what we need to think about is, what is kavana? How would we define kavana? That's the answer. Participation's in picking up. Let's build. Remember good, better, best? We said that about davening. What would be different definitions of kavana? How would you define kavana?
Understanding.
Understanding. Okay. Understanding of what? Understanding of the words. Okay, so kavan is to understand the words. I need to understand what I'm saying. Anyone else?
Intent.
Okay, who said that? Intent for what? Intent that what I'm doing matters. Okay, so listen to what Rav Chaim says. Nirelomar, ditrei gavne kavanos yesh betfil. Rav Chaim is well known for dividing things into two types. There are two types of kavana. And one of them was said, ha'achas kavana shel pirush hadvarim. One type of kavana is to understand the words that I'm saying. V'yisodah didn't kavana. That's what we would classically call kavana. Kavana is to understand what I'm saying. But there's something much more fundamental, right? If I demonstrate it for you, imagine that I take a random book and I start, we're in the base medrash. Thank God our books here are all sarm. But if I took a history book and I started reading it, would anyone describe that as davening? No, right? And what if I started shuckling when I was reading the history book? Would that change it and make it davening? No, right? What if I took a chumash, at least a Jewish text, and started reading it? Would anyone define that as kavana or tefila? No, right? Same thing, if I shuckled, still not tefila. What if I take a sitter and just start reading it? Would we define that as tefila? Why not? Correct. At that point, I'm still reading. It happens to be I'm reading a sitter. But it's still reading. What transforms reading to davening? What's that key? Yes.
To understand the words that you're saying.
So even if I'm reading it, okay, I read an English sitter.
To
just read it. But I think there's more than understanding what I'm saying. Correct. To define tefillah, and this order of Chaim says, is I need to feel that I'm having a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reading is one thing, davening is something else. Again, they could look the same. I'm scanning with my eyes, perhaps I'm moving my lips, perhaps I'm shuckling, right? I should move my lips. But all of that could be reading and or it could be davening. And the difference is that I feel I'm having a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the Rambam says in Source 4, if I don't have this basic, fundamental type of kavana, chamisha dvar ma'akvin es atfil, it's no good. Because I'm literally not davening at that point. I'm going through motions, I'm reading, I'm doing whatever it is that I'm doing, but I'm not actually davening. To daven, I must feel that at this point in time, I'm talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then aspirationally, and I have to have that the whole time. That's why the Rambam doesn't differentiate first bracha, second bracha, third bracha, fourth bracha. Aspirationally, again, the good, better, best, I should try to understand what I'm saying. It's much more meaningful. It's much more heartfelt if I understand the words that I'm saying. But that's not a prerequisite for tefillah. A prerequisite for tefillah is at least I understand I'm talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we have a few more minutes. I want to try to touch on part three. What we've learned so far is the way Hashem creates the world is Hashem makes tefillah part of the natural course of events. They're not miraculous. Hashem created the world in such a way that if I turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tefillah works. Sometimes we have to understand what works means. Then we understand that tefillah is about a conversation. That's the core. That's the definition of tefillah. But what happens the other way? Do I ever hear Hashem? So we turn to the first pasuk in Vayikra. Vayikra al Moshe v'yedaber Hashem elav me'ol moed le'mor. If we think critically about this pasuk, what's a little bit bothersome about the pasuk? Just follow the flow of the pasuk. Vayikra al Moshe v'yedaber Hashem elav me'ol moed le'mor. What should jump out to you right away? Well, Hashem says something, but it doesn't say what Hashem says. Exactly, right? Vayikra, Hashem calls out to Moshe. Vayidaber Hashem elav, and Hashem speaks to him, me'ol moed le'mor. And we know also, if you're Baal Korah, if you've looked inside the Chumash, or inside the Sefer Torah, what do we know about that word Vayikra? There's a little...
Small aleph,
thank you. So Rashi says, what's Vayikra el Moshe? Hakol holech umagil aznav, v'chol Yisrael lo shomim. Powerful Rashi. There's a voice that emanates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a voice that theoretically every single person could have heard, and yet only one person hears the voice. And who's that one person? Moshe. And now I want to take this little aleph. The little aleph, if we pause and we reflect, the word vayakar and the word vayikra are similar and yet fundamentally different words. Anyone know in Hebrew, vayakar? What does that word mean? It comes from the Lashon Mikre. What's Mikre? So it could mean chance. A Mikre with a hey is chance. Vayakar Mikre is a chance, something random. And what's vayikra with an aleph?
Call
out. When you call out, that's a targeted outreach. I call out to you. Hashem is saying to Moshe, Vayikra Moshe, it is targeted. It's very intentional. Mikre is coincidence. So we think about this play on words for a minute. Vayakar, without the little aleph, if I don't notice the little aleph, it's random. It's happenstance. Oh my God, would you believe this just happened? With the little aleph, it transforms it from mikre, from coincidence, to a calling. Instead of something being random, I realize that Hashem is talking to me. And that is why Rashi says, Moshe, who is attuned to this little detail that I see the little aleph, it doesn't make a sound, it's small, but I pay attention to the little details in life, all of a sudden, instead of something being random, it's targeted. It's Hashem calling out to me. And that's the suggestion to start to think about and to quickly try to capture the last two sources. Is that we have these random, quote-unquote, coincidences in life all the time. And we can either choose to discard them, to disregard them, to write them off as it's random, or to appreciate that Hashem calls out to us all the time. The difference between Moshe, the difference between greatness and normalcy is being attentive to these little details, seeing the hand of Hashem, seeing Hashem talk back to us. Because if we talk to Hashem, Hashem will respond only if we hear it. And it's illustrated, again, briefly in these last two sources. Amar Rabbi Alexandrai, I'm sorry, 1 minute. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Lo nivru re'emim, ela lifshot akmumos shebalev. Thunder was created to actually try to straighten the crookedness of our heart. In other words, I hear thunder, and I could either just say like, wow, and I could tremble, or I could internalize a message. But says Rabbi Alexandrai, that's actually Hashem calling out to us. Or the last source, Keshachal Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma, halach Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion lebakro. Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma was sick. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion came to visit him. Amarlo, Rabbi, ma'ani lachay olam haba. Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma, who's sick, says to his Rabbi, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, am I going to merit a portion olam haba? Amarlo, klum aseh bal yadecha. Did anything happen to you? Amarlo, ma'u shel Purim. I had money set aside for my Purim meal. And I mixed them up with tzedakah money, and instead I gave them away to poor people. So you have a very simple thing. I had money set aside for a Purim meal. I forgot. I thought it was tzedakah, and I gave it as tzedakah money. Amarlo. So listen to what Ruchanani ben Tradion says. Im kain, if so, I wish to be like you. What exactly is happening? So Refran says something so profound. He says, if Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was able to see in a random event, he mixed up money. If what he was able to see was a Yad Hashem, he was able to see the hand of Hashem in something so small and so mundane in his life, you are going to have a big portion of Olam Haba. If you're able to see random events, money getting mixed up, as not just random, not just an accident, not just a coincidence, but a Vayikra Hashem talking to you, if you live your life in that way, where you see Hashem's involvement, then I am jealous of you, I want to live your life. And that's part three, is to appreciate that in tefillah it's a conversation. We obviously are attuned to our conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our goal is to raise our antenna, to kind of open our ears and our eyes to hearing Hashem talk to us. Emir Tzah Hashem, in this time in particular, but always in life, our tefillos should be heartfelt. They should be conversations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we should be zocha to see and to hear and to understand the answers that Hashem provides for us.